TV Corner.
All right. Hey, guys. Welcome to another Film Core TV Corner's Game of Thrones podcast. This is season 6, episode 6, Blood of My Blood. Woo! I'm joined with Greg and TJ again.
Hello, hello.
And greetings.
Yeah, let's get into this episode. So we start right with Bran and Meera sort of escaping, but not really escaping the Whites. And Bran is still working out. We get a lot of flashes of Westeros past. So basically, Bran's just seeing everything that's... He's getting a really fast recap of what's happened these past 5 seasons, so...
Yeah, this is the first glimpse we get of the Mad King, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I remember seeing him any other time in the series, so...
No, this is it. This is the first time.
Like the first visual, which is pretty sweet. I like that a lot.
Yeah. Which I thought was kind of... I mean, I feel like we caught that, but I feel like some people might have been like, oh, who is that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a little inside baseball, right? But
definitely.
I mean, I'm guessing. I'm guessing we're gonna see more of it. We're gonna get like an extended scene, maybe of it.
Oh yeah, I'm hoping they didn't just shoot some old guy on a throne going burn them all.
Yeah.
And then like they don't plan on doing any more with that.
There was also a quick sneak of I don't know if you guys saw this, but Lyanna Stark says "Promise me, Ned," and you see a bloody hand. So we get that teaser is really hidden in there too. So. Again, another nod to the Tower of Joy. And TJ, you were right. You predicted that they would be rescued typical fantasy style by another character, and they were, by Benjen Stark, who I did not recognize right away because it's been so long since we've seen him.
Yeah, I recognized the eyes.
There's no way that that actor thought he was coming back 6 years later, right?
Well,
yeah.
Maybe
there's no way
in.
He knew he was coming
like,
back.
Maybe he's checking in. They're like, trust me. We'll bring you in.
Don't worry. We're going to cut
he was
you
in what,
in
maybe
later.
one episode in season one? And I mean, I'm surprised they didn't recast him, honestly. Like, they pulled Dario on us, you know?
Honestly, we probably wouldn't have. I mean, it's been long enough to where we wouldn't have known or remembered right away.
Yeah, it would have taken a second. I mean, if I hadn't watched through the series twice, then I probably wouldn't have recognized his eyes right away. But I definitely pulled that just because I had watched through the whole series recently.
Yeah, well, he shows up and pulls a classic "Come with me if you want to live" on Brandon Muir, and then he kind of explains how he's still alive in the North. Essentially, White Walker stabs him with an ice sword, and then the Children of the Forest save him, creating this kind of like zombie human hybrid thing, which is kind of like glossed over a little too quickly because it's kind of insane. So
yeah, I think the Ringer pointed this out, but there's so many huge moments in this episode that are kind of just like yada yada. You know, that I'm really hoping that they kind of like give us a second to really soak it up.
Yeah, because the Children of the Forest never mentioned to Bran that they met Benjen Stark, and like I don't expect that they do that kind of thing regularly. So there must have been a reason why they chose to save him. Like they've never saved anyone else.
Yeah, I mean, even the Three-Eyed Crow. I mean, Benjen kind of clued in that he and the Three-Eyed Crow were, you know, at least cool. Like he knew him.
Yeah, I mean,
I can't imagine why the Three-Eyed Crow wouldn't have told Bran about this, but maybe there was some reasoning behind
it. Guys, for all the fans, we need to get our terms right. It's a three-eyed raven, and the crows are our Night's Watch, right?
Yes, true, true. Who is Brendan Targaryen, by the way.
Who's that?
They don't explain that either, though. They never mentioned that.
Wait, who's Brendan Targaryen?
The three-eyed raven.
Oh, is he? He's a Targaryen?
Yeah, he's Brendan Rivers. He's a bastard who was legitimized later.
That's right.
Oh, wow.
Tell me what you think of this theory, and it's nuts. But he says to him, "It's time for you to become me." What if he's like a super old future Bran?
They've already said that it's Brendan Rivers who already like lived a life and did stuff in the past with other people who can vouch for that. So I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, that also would have been kind of like, I feel like, I mean, there were a lot of things this episode that we called and predicted, so I'm glad that they can't go that route with it, because that'd be super, like, come on.
It does seem, I mean, I think a lot of people, after, you know, we talked last week, it seemed like a lot of different blogs and writers, like TV writers, were sort of on the same page as us as far as, like, the worry with what, you know, time travel might do to the show. And it does seem like the show maybe preempted those worries and is gonna like introduced it and is kind of stepping away from it, you know? I mean, it does feel like we're getting away from him affecting the past and more so just being able to see it.
Yeah,
Oh yeah, or
same.
maybe he can see the wisdom in not affecting the past, because it seems like Bran's doing some real growing up real fast. You know what I mean?
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
Yeah, well, speaking of growing up real fast, Sam and Gilly head back to Horn Hill so that Sam can introduce his family to his, who they assume, prostitute girlfriend and his bastard child. So that actually, it went a lot better than I thought it was going to until Gilly gave away that she was a wildling. But even then, it still went according to plan. So,
Oh,
would
yeah.
you guys think of Sam's decision to take Gilly, Lil Sam, and Heartsbane?
I thought it was great. Yeah. I mean, this storyline to me has seemed a little bit, I don't want to say pointless, but like, I mean, maybe it's something I don't see yet. But if they're going to have it in there, I want to see Sam do some stepping up. He's never had any kind of confidence unless it came to Gilly. So it's good to see him step up, even stand up to his father. You know, there's probably some real trauma there.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the way he laid into him, like when he's about to have a second role and he's like, "Aren't you fat enough?" And you could just tell by everyone else's reactions that that is like it happened all the time. That he
Oh
just
yeah,
constantly like berating him.
dude was the worst.
I mean, it's
Like,
I
those
told
were
you they were
his pretty
finance
much his
bros. I
first
told you
word.
this.
I mean, look, it's definitely cathartic for Sam to basically tell his dad to piss off, right? But I mean, this guy supposedly was gonna pretend that he was killed in a hunting accident as a kid to keep him from, like, the guy is serious, right? And
Oh
yet
no. Yeah.
that whole scene where like Sam was like, what was he, he's like stepping up on a trunk to get the sword off. I mean, it's like he's taking his dad's like signed baseball or something. You know what I mean? Like, there is, I mean, like, are you telling me you're stealing a Valyrian sword and this guy's not gonna, like, you're not worried about this guy coming after you?
That's it. That's literally immediately what I thought. Like, it's not like you're just stealing from your parents' liquor cabinet. Like, you're stealing, like, your dad's Porsche. Like, he's about to be fucking
Yeah.
furious.
Yeah, this is
Like,
like,
oh, totally.
this is like straight up Ferris Bueller, like, you know, to the max.
Do you think he plans to? I mean, I think Sam realized that Valyrian steel has an effect on White Walkers, so I think maybe he's just taking it as a precaution. Maybe he'll send it to the north somehow.
Well, I mean, it's not like he can't go to the Citadel now, right? If he's bringing Gilly with him.
He could probably hide her in town. I mean, what's kind of exciting is we haven't seen, was it Oldstown? So, you know, we have a whole new canvas, you know, to check out. But you know,
That's
and I
true.
guess he could leave her in the town and keep her. I mean, they can really do whatever they want with it. I mean, I think it's supposed to be like a university basically, right? So like all their books are going to be there, and like it's like the heart of knowledge in Westeros. So I'm really psyched to see how they, you know, how they show it.
Yeah, I am
Yeah.
actually super excited to see it. You get a brief. There's a part in the books that touches on kind of what it's like. It's basically the DMV, but I'm really so excited to see it on screen. But
There's like, it's like, it's got like the highest towers in the world, right? Or am I confusing it? It's, yeah, okay.
yeah. So moving on, Arya fails, just like we said she would.
Yeah, who predicted this? I think.
I predicted that she would fail, but wouldn't be her own fault. But it was actually her own fault.
It was a decision, a conscious decision to like say no to this.
She basically said, like, I'm not gonna be one of these guys.
What do
Yeah.
you think of? So now the Waif basically saw her choose not to kill her, gave away the secret, and she goes to Jaqen H'ghar and
Snitch.
it's like, hey, like, dude, you told
Snitch.
me like if she fucks up, I could handle this, and he's like, yeah, I did. Go ahead. So now Arya digs up Needle and is sleeping with her next to her. So basically, she's sleeping with a gun under her pillow at this point.
But that was like a conscious decision. She definitely, you know, she knew what was going to happen. I mean, the
But
waif was.
what I don't understand is, well, what I don't understand is the fact that she's seen Jaqen H'ghar kill a lot of other people. And they have said repeatedly, like, you're going to kill people, like, we kill people, you know how the system works. So I don't understand how you go through all this training and then now,
Yeah, it's, I mean, the also like there was this mention, I think Littlefinger says in like one of the early, maybe season three, about how they could hire a faceless man to kill someone, but it'll be like far too expensive. And I'm thinking, like, if you have this organization that is so renowned for doing something particularly well, but they're so expensive that even the guy who's in charge of the king's gold is worried about you know, his budget. How like how poorly does it speak of this organization that they let this girl just come in and then like she can't kill a actress?
Well, yeah, but look who hired her though. You know, it's this actress girl. Maybe they were like, yeah, we'll do this for free. We got someone we need to jump in. You know.
Oh, so you think maybe it, like he knew this was gonna happen and now like maybe. Like, maybe the real test is how she deals with the wave.
Ooh, I didn't think of that. No, I...
Oh, okay. All right, I'm adding on to what...
No, I like that. I like that point. But I think the real... I mean, honestly, like, I like the fact that you're pointing out that this could have all actually been a test and she wasn't, like, gonna be able to actually kill the actress. Like, Lady Crane. Like, maybe if she did try to actually kill her, maybe it was actually Jaqen H'ghar was Lady Crane just testing her to see if she would go through with it. So ultimately, she was never going to really kill Lady Crane.
Well, I thought what you were getting at was that Littlefinger didn't think they could afford faceless men, faceless assassins or whatever. This small town actress could afford an assassin to kill off her competition. You know, I didn't think that you were saying like. It was a test, but I mean, I guess I could see where that could be a thing.
No.
Like
I mean,
like what Greg's red flag is saying, like how could she possibly afford to do this if it costs that much money? Like that doesn't add up.
Right, and also, right. I mean, just but like the pure like how bad is Jaqen H'ghar at his job if he can't tell that she's like not really cut out for this, right? Which makes me think like maybe, you know, maybe he knows there's some greater purpose for her, which I mean, kind of you know fits in the line with all the other Stark. Children's storylines, right? Like maybe there is something specific to her that also, you know, pushes us back towards like Westeros and maybe sends her back, you know, and sort of like the common thing we keep seeing, I think, this season is like the cutting away of, you know, excess storylines. And this one sort of feels to me like that too. You know, like I think they're trying to weave her back into it, you know, and the way they're doing it is slightly clumsy, but like there's enough cool, interesting things happening, you know. Like I was thinking to myself how weird it is for this show to have like a whole like taking the time to introduce us to these different actors in this theater troupe. Mm-hmm. I mean, it spends like real, you know. There's only 10 episodes this season, and you know
we see one of their penises.
We see the performance multiple times. So it's not like okay, I you know see it once, I get it. They're in a play. Like do I need to see this like three different times?
Yeah, and she offends the writer of the play, and like I mean, like we're it's you know it's brief in the scheme of things, but for one episode, you know when you're looking at like 53 minutes of runtime, you get 5 minutes to a theater troupe that's 5 minutes away from Tyrion, from Jaime, from Jon Snow. You know what I mean? Like, so I just thought that was really interesting. There must be something more to it, you know, that's coming.
Yeah, those are pretty big speaking roles. Yeah. But at the same time, we kind of wanted to get to know Lady Crane, to know, I mean, if we didn't get to know Lady Crane, if she was just one of these actresses, then she probably could have easily taken her out. But we get to know the troop that she works with, and we see that they're not all good, they're not all great people, but one of them, Lady Crane, really talented and actually is a good woman. I mean, that might just be the decision, or they let us make the decision with Arya whether this lady's gonna die, right. You know what I mean?
Right.
Honestly, I was like, just do it. I was like, I'm not really invested in anyone else right now, please. Let's just get through this. What are your predictions for the face-off between Arya and the Waif? I mean, obviously Arya's gonna win. I don't see them killing her right now at this point. It would be crazy if they did, but they're not going to.
No, they're not going to.
I think maybe the Waif is gonna come as somebody else, and Arya's gonna somehow catch on to it, see right through it, and kill her before she can carry out her plan. That's what I think may happen.
That'd actually be pretty cool. Like, what if she was like Jon Snow and like Arya's like, "What are you doing here?" And she's like, "Oh, yeah, with me." And then like Arya has to kill Jon Snow or fake Jon Snow.
Yeah, well, I'm going more with like I think the way Jaqen has been set up in the earlier seasons as this omnipotent, wise person, to make him just like a villain who turns on her feels really thin. And I feel like this is my prediction. We have our showdown with the Waif. Before she kills her, Jaqen shows up and basically relieves her and says, "You were never a faceless man, but that's okay. You're strong." You know, he basically condones
Just get
her
out of here,
leaving.
kid.
Yeah. Go be the next, you know, be Arya Stark. And we have this, you know, as much of a resolution in their relationship as we can. Because I just feel like they changed him from like a kind of cool guy, right, when we first meet him, season two, maybe, and into this weird priest who only like whose religion is more
Who
important than
cuts
everything
people's
else.
faces off and is
Yeah, but
wearing
then
them.
like he made up, I mean, okay, like she helped you out of a cage, bro, and you were okay killing three people for, you know what I mean? Like, it just, I don't know, something doesn't feel right there for me with this sort of setup, with him allowing the waif to, like, you know, he's like sicking a dog on her basically, which I
Does
don't know.
seem, yeah, actually out of character.
So your prediction is that nobody dies, Arya gets cut loose, and mercy. You're basically saying mercy. Okay.
All right. Well, speaking of resolutions, let's go over to King's Landing, where I swear to God, Greg, like, I knew you'd be so happy about this.
Oh yeah.
Because
Oh
the
yeah.
sparrow really comes out on top.
Totally.
Although my whole argument that he's actually like a genuine moral force is kind of undercut with that weird close-up of him just sort of grinning down at them.
Yeah. No, I think that was
Yeah, let's dig
huge.
into this. So
Yeah, like
basically,
this.
Tommen manages to diplomatically get Margaery rescued by allowing the Faith to have a more active role in the ruling of basically Westeros at this point. You know, more immediately King's Landing, but essentially his reach extends to all the other kingdoms. Do you think Margaery is really converted or just pretending?
Yeah, she's totally pretending, I think. The big issue here is that everybody's been playing this game to get the Iron Throne, and the Sparrow has effectively set up his own Iron Throne. You know what I mean? He's completely changed the game, and now he's like equal in power to the king. You know what
Yeah,
I'm
that's a
saying?
great point. Like, instead of, you know, let's like screw like the institution that's already been created, I'm gonna create my own institution to rival that one. Which is
Yeah,
like his rise to power was the time it took was like 3 months. I feel like people have plotted for
Yeah.
years to get to the Iron Throne.
And he didn't need the Iron
No.
Throne. He's the wording they use, the twin pillars, like he's effectively, that was just the craziest scene to me. Like he's just power played
I was
everybody.
so okay, I was so disappointed. Like, because the most exciting thing about that scene, like physically, was that horse climbing the stairs. Like,
Oh,
other than that,
absolutely.
they should have known Margaery wasn't gonna do the walk as soon as they showed up and her head wasn't shaven. That should have been like a dead giveaway.
I didn't even think of that. Yeah,
It's
totally.
interesting
Like, they
how,
should.
like, we're basically constantly told that, like, I mean, whatever happens at King's Landing, root against the guy who seems to have the upper hand. You know what I mean?
That's true. That's
Like
true.
it's always like, all right, well, you know, no one's getting it by being just. So basically, you have, I mean, it's kind of cool how they do it, right? Because even visually, like to your point, like he's on the horse, but he's got to go up, you know. And we're looking at it, and we're seeing Jaime down there, and of course, there's that next scene where he's basically brought to trial for trying to incite a rebellion.
Yeah, he's relieved of his
Well,
duty.
I mean, Tommen. All right, so I actually agree with Tommen on this, just because like the crown looks a mess. Like, number one, like you have basically your highest like commanding officers show up and they're out of control, like trying to seize like Margaery back, and you're in there trying to peacefully calm things down. You look like you guys can't communicate or like properly like strategize anything. So for PR purposes, you have to let Jaime go because he looks like he's out of control. You can't control your own Kingsguard. Like, they're acting without you. Like, you know.
Let me ask you guys this though. With Jaime out of the equation, how interested are you in watching King's Landing?
Oh, such a great question. Less.
Less, right? Yeah, totally.
Definitely
I mean,
less. Yeah.
yeah, 100%, right? Like now it's like, oh, yeah, like it's a fight between the High Sparrow, Tommen, who, I mean, like unless you're, was it his cat, Sir Pounce, right? Like you're not gonna be super pumped for Margaery versus Olyanna, Lady Olyanna, Cersei, and Sir Robert Strong, right? Like, there's a real, I think, vacuum here. And you know, kind of what kind of, I mean, it was cool, but I think the surprise with this episode. But I was kind of bummed about how things worked out because I think it means that basically we don't get a Return of the Hound, which I thought was, I was really buying into that.
Well, we could still definitely get it. I mean, Cersei still needs her trial by combat. Well, she basically needs her trial and then is going to have to ask for a trial by combat. Whereas she's going to present Sir Robert Strong, and then possibly, you know, the Faith is going to present the Hound. Which,
yes, but
do you think that Sir Robert Strong is like really down for Cersei?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think there's been any reason to doubt that, but I mean, so let's assume that's true, right? Then you have the Hound, who everyone is going to root for, fighting against Sir Robert Strong, and then you have this like double win on the High Sparrow's part, which I just don't see happening. You know, I mean, like, he had his moment. I think that shot that we were talking about of him at the top grinning down at them, like, that's him winning, you know? That's his, like, just slamming the ball through the hoop, you know? So, like, you bring the Hound in now, it just feels, like, gratuitous, you know?
That's true. I mean, also, we've already had another Hound, a battle with the Hound where we are torn that way, like with him and Brienne.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We are all like, oh, stop fighting, just, you know, let's work this out. So I don't know if they'd want to do another battle again where we're torn with the Hound and another character. I mean, because then ultimately you guys would want the Hound to win,
right? Yeah, 100%. Like, I feel like everyone 100% would. Versus like a silent Frankenstein. Yeah, completely.
Yeah. All right, well,
wait, before we move on from King's Landing, can we just talk about Sir or Lord Tyrell's droopy dog's his speech?
Oh my god, well, yeah, the rousing speech to his troops before they walk over there.
It was,
Jesus Christ.
It was awful. It was awful. Like, I was so underwhelmed. Like, I don't even want to see a fight after this. Like, it's fine that this didn't turn into a fight. That was just the worst rousing speech I've
worst
ever seen.
Worst turn-up ever. Yeah, it was real bad. Well, speaking of worst turn-ups ever, let's move into the twins with the Freys. And now Walder Frey has an even younger wife. I swear to God, the next time we see him, it's going to be a toddler. It's ridiculous.
My newborn wife. Yeah, he's the worst.
He's going to pat someone's stomach, like pregnant belly. Just waiting for her to come out.
Yeah.
So yeah, we get our Blackfish rumors confirmed. Obviously, the Tullys have retaken River Run, and Walder Frey wants his men to go take it back. And they're saying that, hey, dude, we don't have the resources. This is real stupid.
So this is like a whole subplot from the books, and actually the last book, and it's a plot that really doesn't have much of a resolution to it.
No.
So it's really hard to sort of, I mean, the show has taken a lot of departures already, so it's weird that they hung on to this portion. I'm thinking it's because it brings Jaime, who we're ultimately interested in, closer to the action, where I think things are ultimately going to happen, like around around
Brienne
Winterfell.
Heading down there. Yeah,
you've got like more of his people. And you take him away from the boring, you know, Sparrow versus Cersei fight in King's Landing. I'm not sure I care still, right? Like, if we spend too much time there, I'm done, you know? Like, it's like the Ironborn, you know? Like, I don't give a shit. I want everyone going someplace, and I want to know where they're going, you know? Like, whether or not the Blackfish or Edmure Tully, who had an awesome kind of introduction, like, you know, with the arrows when he was first at the funeral of his dad. I love that. He's like, just couldn't nail it. You know, just couldn't get the
arrows. The Blackfish had to shoot it. That was super embarrassing.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was such a great, such a perfect, you know, way to introduce him as a character. But so he's like a buffoon, right? I mean, he's a, like, are we supposed to give a shit? Again, it's like, are we supposed to care? And if so, why? You know? So I'm curious what you guys think. Like, where is this heading? You know, is it just sort of like a feeble way to wrap things up with a couple characters, or are we going somewhere here?
I think what's gonna happen is Brienne's gonna head down there to go meet the Blackfish, basically. Ultimately, I think that Sansa is going to be in, they're going to kill the Freys. They're going to be in charge of River Run and the twins. Like, that's ultimately, I think, what's going to happen.
So you think Jamie flips sides? Because he's technically on the Frey side here, right?
No, I think something else is going to go down in King's Landing, and Jamie's going to be like, nah, I got to peace out and go handle this, so whatever with what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And then I think once we get to that point where they're taking over River Run and the twins, that Jamie will either be dead or will be heading back to King's Landing to tend to other things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think Jamie might have enough empathy at this point to ride down there after. I mean, I think the Freys are definitely get whooped. That's my prediction on that. The Freys are definitely gonna get their comeuppance for the Red Wedding, but I think that Jamie might have developed enough empathy where he goes down, meets up with Blackfish and probably Brienne as well, and you know, there's a little bit of a yeah, I get it. This is cool. You guys are better than the Freys. The Freys weren't to be trusted, kind of thing, you know.
So we get like our second, like Jamie redemption, basically. Like,
Yeah. I mean, they're gonna need people. I mean, if they're gonna take it to the Sparrow, are you even gonna take it to the Sparrow? I'm actually not really sure about that. If they want to reclaim Tommen from the Sparrow, they're gonna need people.
Take it to the Sparrows.
Yeah, they gotta gain friends at this point.
Well,
because I mean, the king.
I mean, I'm wondering if this might be a good segue to think about what's happening out east with Dany's new army, because certainly what's going on, like Westeros is a mess. People are just sort of like, you know, like the fight isn't really important. You know, it's like it's ripe to be taken over by someone with true strength. So yeah. Is that, you know, is that what she's going to walk into, basically? I mean, does she just take over?
I mean, that actually might be to back into my point of like something bigger might call Jamie away to where that whole situation isn't even important anymore. If Dany were to show up at King's Landing with dragons and like, yeah, then like this is a game changer, and all of a sudden like it's more important to protect what you already have established than to fight for any extra stuff right now.
Because
at that point it'll be just a fight to survive, not to like take on any new responsibilities.
Yeah, because I don't see I don't see Dany taking on the High Sparrow, you know, in any sort of serious way, or the Faith Militant. I mean, her religion is herself, basically, right? So
no, I mean, I don't think anyone's going to try and, I can't see anyone realistically wanting to stand against a true Targaryen, number one, a Targaryen with dragons, a Targaryen with the Dothraki, entire Dothraki horde behind her, all the Unsullied behind her. I mean, I just don't see, like, given that they've been fighting for this long amongst themselves, I think if anything, they'll be happy to welcome a unifying body who isn't part of the fray already. Of people.
And do you think that unifying body comes with Euron Greyjoy and all his ships?
Okay, now that we're moving into that, why is 1,000 ships the magic number right now? Like, that really frustrated me. It's a throwaway line, it was just stupid. Alright, so 8, realistically, so the Iron Islands are on the other side of Westeros. So they would have to sail all the way around the southern tip. Past, I can't say it right now, where the sand takes sun, past, like, Sunspear and, like, Dorne, go all the way around, through the Narrow Sea, then over to Meereen. That's gonna take forever, number one. Number two, like, I don't think Dany's gonna take, Euron Greyjoy has nothing. Besides ships, he has literally nothing else to offer her.
Well, he's a madman, too, right?
Yeah, like, I just don't, like, aside from, like, just having that, he can't be like, well, okay, what lands do you have? None. What friends do you have? None. Then what? Like,
maybe Dany does what she does best. She kills Euron, handles him real quick, and then everybody's like, oh.
Yeah, like, now these are just my ships. Like, nah.
Yeah.
Thank you for delivering me my ships. Cool.
Right. Exactly. Just like she did with her army, just like she did with the hordes, the
Khalasar, yeah.
The Dothraki hordes, yeah, with the whole Khalasar. I mean, that seems to be her move. And if Euron shows up talking some dumb shit about getting married, like, I do not see her, you know, going along with
that
at all.
How do you guys feel like the other Unsullied are going to feel like when she walks up with that horde? Who doesn't, like, it's just, okay, I don't understand. What is she going to do with them? Like, walk back to Meereen and be like, okay, like, you guys hang out outside? Like, they don't have actual jobs. They don't, like...
Well,
they somewhat trade amongst themselves, but like they can't become a part of the same civilization. Like it's just like not a.
I mean, but you mean in Westeros? Because I'm guessing that basically this move means by the end of this season, all those guys and their horses are getting on ships, and we're going west.
Well, Meereen. Okay, Meereen is different enough, but Westeros is a whole other world. Like, what are they gonna do over there?
Just, you know, rape and pillage.
Like how long can you just straight up rape and pillage things? Like at what point?
They're gonna be like the wild.
Hermione, let me
from
tell
the
you,
west. They're gonna come up.
You can rape and pillage for a long time, okay? with the right resources. So
I mean, like when do you just want the party to end and you just want to go home and like you know, like.
Have you ever been to a rape and pillage party? It does not stop.
not enough of them, obviously. Okay.
Well, you're moving to Miami soon, so you know you'll have your chance.
That's true. Moving to Dorne, the Dorne of the United States.
The Miami.
Much worse wine in Miami than in Dorne, but I take your point.
Really quick, what'd you guys think about Dany's speech at the end?
Oh, I hated it. Not? Hated it.
Yeah, Drogo did it way better. First of all, and I mean, I feel like I've seen this scene four times already.
Yeah. Oh, same, you know what I mean? Same. I was like, we've heard this speech. We've heard like, cool. This... Just show them the dragon and just like fly away and have them just follow you. That would've been whatever. Also, the hold on cost like the hold on, I'll be right back. Costume change was just weird. Like they didn't see this giant fucking dragon a second ago. Like where was it hiding?
Right. And she came up from behind them, so she was like, "We're gonna make a big entrance." Look, I get it. The dragon's huge. The dragon's even bigger than it was before, which is crazy. And she's riding the dragon, which is different. But other than that, this scene feels played out.
Is it just me or does it also feel like the extras that they're getting to play Dothraki are getting fatter and older and fewer, right? It was weak, man.
Fatter
like they couldn't,
and fewer,
like they couldn't find
dude,
enough.
It was like 30 dudes.
Or their CGI wasn't strong enough.
Not everyone
like,
can be just like fucking like. The Dragon Ball Z level ripped, okay?
Yeah, but it's like she killed the best ones, and it's just like everyone's like fat brother got, you know, got left.
That's true. She did kill the best ones.
You know?
Yeah.
They're like shit. We're not doing anything else. Come on, let's do this.
This is definitely second. Straight.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
This is the beat.
Yeah,
it's the B-squad.
All right, guys. Well, I wanted to bring in our newest segment, who's having the best week / worst week. So, who's having the best week?
I'm going to say Sam Tarly. I think he, you know, considering, like, you remember the first speech where he told Jon why he had to join the Night's Watch, and you think about who that guy was and the strides he's made, and also, like, I mean, you know, like he's going up against his father. Like there's like all the symbolism of it, you know. He's a completely new man, I think. Despite still being the person that we love, you know.
Yeah, actually, I thought Gilly was having the best week.
Oh yeah.
She's in a fucking badass house, got her makeover. Like now Sam isn't leaving her. Like things are looking pretty good right now.
Yeah, but I mean, do you see how she was walking in those heels? Come on.
Pretty woman. It's a pretty woman makeover. She has to get it. She has to like. Fall into it.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm gonna say the High Sparrow.
Oh yeah,
High Sparrow had a fantastic week. His plan worked.
I can't wait until he dies. I'd be so happy that Greg has no one to root for now.
wait till he dies and you guys are like, oh shit, he was actually kind of cool. Okay, I'm missing.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Worst week ever.
Maybe Randall Tarly, because he's gonna wake up that morning and he's gonna like go and just like be like, oh, bring me my coffee, and then he's gonna like sit down, like look at the newspaper, and then like just the newspaper's just gonna like drop and he's gonna look above it and just see the empty space above his fireplace and be like,
oh,
yes. Yeah. I think
Westeros Weekly.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. That'll be like his worst morning ever.
Worst week?
Bran? I mean, I guess it's not horrible.
I was actually going to say that Edmure Tully probably is having the worst week.
Yeah, Edmure's, just by the look on his face, he's probably having a... I mean, he's in the Frey's dungeons. Like, those have to be some of the worst dungeons.
He's like in a hangover that just, like, won't end.
Yeah.
Yeah, what did... I mean, so we're to assume he's just been, like, in their dungeons for years since the Red Wedding?
Yeah, it's been a while.
I guess the last time he was free was on his wedding night with a woman in bed, like being watched by a bunch of people.
Well, we don't know. I mean,
as he was about to have, you know, sleep with his wife for the first time. So everything since then,
they did consummate it, right? Like they had to have.
Yeah, that's the whole. That's the whole reason for it, them allowing it to happen.
Right. All right. TJ, do you have any other worst weeks?
Worst week. I feel like the girl who Arya called out.
Oh, yeah. And the actress. The younger
actress. What is she going to do now? Like, clearly that was an attempt on her life. Like, she's totally fired.
She's totally fired.
I would hope. She's losing
honestly,
that gig,
honestly, she should just be
sure.
Like, I don't know what this crazy kid is talking about. And they're like, does anybody know her? Yeah. And they're like, no. And then that would be the end of it. Like,
well, no, if I'm wrong in my prediction, then maybe I'd give worst week to Jaqen H'Kar. Because he's like, spent all this time training someone just to find out that they're shit at their job.
He just lost a contract.
Yeah.
You know?
Like he's got to explain this to the gods right now.
Yeah.
To the faceless guy.
All right, guys. Well,
the many faced god.
Yeah. Let's wrap this up. Do you guys have any last minute predictions or anything for episode 7? Episode 7 is usually like a pretty like insane one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Usually a big action set piece on. This in this part of the season, I honestly I was banking on the showdown in King's Landing, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen at this point. So
well,
I'm having a hard time calling it.
We'll probably get more of the Iron Islands, right? We'll probably go back over there. I'm guessing, you know, we go back to the north and we see more Sansa stuff and Jon. Maybe some more flashbacks with Bran. That'd be kind of cool because I, like I said earlier, I'd love to really get some expansion on that, you know.
I'm just hoping we finally get this stupid war in the north. That's all I want. God, please.
I think we're looking at episode 9 for that. That feels like an episode 9.
I can't.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And I'm calling it. Last shot is going to be Dothraki stepping off ships onto Westeros. That's my
like episode 10.
Yeah, that's like my.
What about the Night King approaching the Wall to come to the world of men?
Maybe they'll like sync it up to where like his first step, then Dothraki's first step. You know that kind of thing.
Ooh, I like where your head's at.
Yeah. Maybe they'll call episode 10 like you know, step one.
I hope not. Yes. I hope not. I think they get paid a lot more than that. Come up with step one.
Look, we're brainstorming here. We're brainstorming.
Yeah. No, I. First draft.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for getting into this week's podcast. And we'll see you next week.
Cool. Thank you.
And who all right. See you, Armani. Are you? The proud lord said that I must bow so low. Only a cat of a different coat, that's all the truth I know. And a coat of gold, a coat of